And welcome, everybody, to Off the Hook Overtime, where I seem to have made it to YouTube land.
I made it.
You made it, Kyle?
Hi.
And Rob, Gila, Alex, y'all in YouTube land?
Yep. We are here.
We are.
Overtime show? Okay, great. And YouTube is working, right?
Waiting for YouTube to catch up with us.
Right.
And there it is. We sound good.
So damn slow. Okay, well, anything people wanted to get to that we didn't have time for?
Great outro song by the boss there for the main show.
It really is. And it's getting a lot of play. But, you know, my question is, where are all the other artists? You know, I want to see new artists. I want to see all kinds of songs talking about the things that are going on. That's just one thing happening.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really glad that you played that song, and I meant to suggest another outro song, but maybe we could play this one next week. But, you know, Billy Bragg came out with a new song against ICE
Played that last night, Alex, on the other show.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I didn't hear that. Yeah. Oh,
Maybe you should listen to the other show, too, because you'd be up on a lot more things.
I would be. I certainly would be. But I thought that one was pretty good, too.
It is. It is. Kind of a cold close. It just ends.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I agree.
It's like his bus arrived or something, and he had to stop immediately. But, you know, it's a good song. It really is a good song. But, you know, there needs to be 100 songs. I mean, think of the 1960s. All the protest songs came out of the 1960s. 1960s were known as protest song era. Well, there's a lot more to protest now. And I think the difference is, back then, we weren't all in our little cliques as far as types of music we listened to. People tended to hear the same thing. Yeah, there was less variety, but there was an advantage to that in that we were more together as far as knowing music. I think if we just listen to each other's music more, that won't be a problem, but we have to be open to that.
Yeah, I
agree. I mean, I can't just...
Sorry to jump on you there, but I agree it's a great song, and I do want to mention that I know we have a lot of creative listeners, and if you know of, or even better, if you've made a song or you make a song that's relevant to what's going on, let us know. We're always up for new things to put on the air, new things to close the show with. Email us, oth@2600.com.
And on that subject, you know, we are looking for people to help create with us. You know, even though we don't yet have a home for Hope, we're looking for people to participate, and that goes for music as well as art of all sorts. Maybe you have a sound that is something that could be part of Hope. Maybe you're a musician and you can write the next theme to the conference itself, or maybe you're an artist who can design something that people would really get a kick out of. It's a great way to open up some doors for new people and just kind of show the world what the hacker community is all about.
I've thought about this a lot, and I really love that. And that idea that, yeah, people should be empowered. The ability, the tools and software and things you can use to create stuff is really widely available. There's a lot of great stuff you could be doing, so we'd love to see more of that stuff. And in my experience, there's so much to draw upon. And even if you want to kind of go off and innovate and bring in new ideas, new sounds and things, but just in the realm of technology or telephony, there are so many different kinds of sounds and ambiances and things you can give to different forms of media, whether that's video or online or interactive stuff. But we are really interested in what kind of creative stuff is possible out there. And we do a lot with our own history. I've found that's very useful. Go back through your own work, through the work of projects you've been involved with. Draw upon that. That's a way a lot of designers and artists kind of refine and reevaluate and refresh their technique or their process. And we want to kind of implore other people to do that as well with things that they find dear to them and share and talk about different themes through the visual or audio realms, and just really push the limits of it and your imagination. We'd really love to see that.
Yeah, and we didn't really get to talk about this on the show. But we kind of hit a milestone yesterday with the Hope Conference, in that we changed direction or changed lanes or went down a different road, or we made some big changes. We made some really big changes in the whole way the conference is run. Hope is now its own entity. Hope is now a 501c3 nonprofit. And what that means is that we are eligible for grants. We are eligible for donations of all sorts. We are dedicated to an educational purpose as far as reaching people who want to attend the conferences, who want to learn about technology, who want to experience technology. We basically we followed Greg's advice, from last year. And basically, what happened to us at St. John's was unfortunate. We were kicked out of there because they didn't appreciate or understand an attendee who was an anarchist who had a pamphlet. Literally, that's all it was. But instead of being defeated by that, we thought, let's make this even bigger. Let's just keep pushing and ensure that hope is around for future generations. And this is a great way to do this, by having independence, by being able to get all kinds of opportunities that we wouldn't have been able to get had we continued going down the same road. Now the future is unwritten. And check out the new website, hope.net. You'll see what we're up to. We'll see some of the things that we're basically dreaming about. We hope it works, but it'll work if people join with us and give us ideas, lend your talents, and steer the ship into someplace really, really interesting, because that's what hackers do. We take disadvantages and turn them into advantages. Yeah, we still have to find a home. We still have to find a place to have the conference. I think we can do that. Let me just say right now, it's going to be in New York, somewhere in the New York City region. It has to be there. That is where we are. That is where we've always been. And New York City is a very, very welcoming place, and it's exactly where we belong. And I know, many people feel that where they are is where we belong. I know, I get that. It's quite convenient for us to go to, some part of Nebraska or something. Yeah, but New York is where we do our thing, and this is where we do radio, it's where we put out the magazine, where we have where we started the meetings, and if we go to a meeting, it's probably going to be that one. And we want you to come to New York as well, because we want people to experience the magic of the city, the magic of the hacker's eyes in this particular part of the world. I know society is all messed up, politics are crazy, yet we survive every day in spite of that. And there's no reason to cower. There's no reason to hide. Except for, of course, ICE. But we've got plans. We've got all kinds of defenses that people are implementing. And I just feel like it's never been as interesting as it has been right now, and the future has never been so full of possibilities as it is right now. So I'm excited for it. I'd love to see where this goes. It's definitely a step that, like every other step we've taken, people say, "Oh, bad idea, don't do that." Well, that's something that only a fool would do. Sounds like exactly the kind of thing that we should do. We should try it. We should see what happens. And we've gotten a lot of good advice. We have so many good people working with us. And it feels like it's all fresh. It's all starting again. And we'd love for you to be a part of it. So visit hope.net and tell us what you think. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, look, I'll jump in too. I think it will really help in making hope at this point less transient and allow us to find a permanent home here, because there's a lot more transparency now. It's its own standalone entity. There's going to be a board. There's bylaws. There's a lot more transparency here. There's reporting now with a 501c3. So I think that the fact that it's a non-for-profit, the fact that you can make tax-deductible donations, I think there's there's a tremendous amount of benefits and also a great deal more trust, I think, associated with being a formal 501c3. And it's great. Yeah, it's going to open up a lot of doors. I think you should think about when people are donating tickets to HOPE for people that couldn't afford them. Well, those are very likely going to be tax-deductible donations now. That's yes. Really cool. You're also going to be eligible to obtain grants for HOPE. There may be educational institutions that want to, you know, provide money for grants or certain workshops or various things that could go on there. There's like, it opens up the door to a lot of really cool things. So I'm very glad that you guys did this and went through the process.
Well, look at it this way. Look at it this way. You know, we have challenges. There's a reason we're not in a hotel in Midtown Manhattan. But that could go away tomorrow with a single grant from a company that wouldn't even feel it. And it would be great for them as well, because they'd be supporting, you know, the future great minds of technology and developing all kinds of new inventions and things like that. You know, just doing something like that, and all of a sudden we can afford it. We can do it. We can manage to make the impossible happen. And when we did the first conference back in 1994, that's exactly how it was characterized. You can't have a conference in the middle of New York City. It's impossible. First of all, no one ever had a big conference of hackers in the United States before. You know, DEF CON was around, but they only had 70 people at that point. You know, this was the first time. This was based on European conferences that had thousands of people. And this was absolutely the first time ever that this happened, and it was right smack in the middle of New York City. Well, they tore down our hotel, so that made that a little bit more difficult. And we have yet to find a decent replacement for that. We found St. John's. We were very happy with that. And, of course, we got blindsided by some closed-mindedness at the highest levels over there. You know, the challenges continued. There was COVID. There were all kinds of things that got in the way. But that just made us want to succeed even more than ever.
Yeah, and I think we've been sort of reassured that we're just going to continue to do the best job we can doing what we've always done. And we realized, I mean, there were good aspects of our affiliation with the university. We really came to understand our impact and our sort of being functionally educational, and that this actually was kind of well aligned. And it's a lot longer journey that we were all on organizationally, and the story itself is come up, and it's been something we've looked at and turned to, and I think we're giving it a try and excited about all of those possibilities as we reestablish the event and in earnest and begin to start welcoming the sort of organizational processes and planning things and all of the detail that goes into kicking off in a new venue. So it's kind of cool to be new again in that way, and then also having put in a lot of work and double checking, and we're still just in the formation and establishment phase of it, and just learning a lot, and hopeful that this is a really good, rewarding move for what has been something that has been volunteer based and profoundly academic from what I think from the outset, from those early days.
Well, I've learned so much about paperwork and just all kinds of things that you have to fill out. But, you know, it kind of makes sense, too. If you think about it, you just sort of do a little research and, yeah, okay, we can do that, and you just have to fill out this particular form in this particular way. And, oh, I didn't know about that form. All right, got to do that, too. But when you do it, and when, you know, things actually come back approved, it's like, oh, wow, I did that right. And it makes sense. Gila?
It does. I just wanted to take a moment and say hello to the almost 50 people who are with us right now.
My goodness.
A lot of people are saying congratulations on the new 501c3 status. That is very exciting. From at Tim R. Graham, I'm grateful you guys are still broadcasting. I remember burning hours of Off the Hook onto MP3 CDs in the early 2000s and listening while I did landscaping.
Yeah, you remember that when people used to put them on CDs and then DVDs, and now it's, everything just gets downloaded.
At Sarah B 4513 says, having been through the event planning nightmares of A, losing the annual venue, and also B, trying to find a venue in Manhattan, I'm rooting for you all. You got this. And KB6NU Ham Radio says, I'm waiting with bated breath to see what venue you find for the next Hope. Wherever it is, I plan to be there to teach a ham radio class. If you'll have me, I'll be making a donation too.
And, you know, it's because of people like you that we're going to move ahead and open things up for speaker submissions and workshop submissions. Even though we don't have a home yet and we don't have a firm date yet, there are people who are just going to say, well, I'll be there wherever it is, whenever it is. And even if you can't make it, basically, if the odds are good that you think you will, submit your ideas, and that way at least they're being developed while we're still in the searching phase. And if you can't make it, that's the way it goes, but hopefully you can. Hopefully a lot of people will be able to, just follow the news as we find out more. And again, people have information for us that's so helpful. They give us tips. They say, this is a good place to look into. And if you know of a place in the New York City area, please send it to us. Email address is feedback@hope.net. We read everything. We've read everything we've gotten so far. We've gotten so many amazing suggestions, and some kind of wacky ones too. But we read them all, and it's always great to hear people's ideas.
Absolutely, this is really exciting, and it makes me so happy that we're finally managing this, because it is something that's been talked about for a long time. It's something that Greg Newby, our much missed friend, was very passionate about, and the fact that we could achieve something like this, I think, honors him and all of us, really.
Yeah, absolutely, and his enthusiasm for the scholarship program, that's going to be something that I think is a big part of what is possible in having this organizational structure. We want to advance that program, likely in his name, and other initiatives that involve advancing the knowledge and understanding of information networks, telecommunications, security, and now even large language models and all this whiz-bang stuff, but basically future technology, all of that is encompassed in the kinds of submissions that we get when people are interested in speaking at Hope. And, of course, we'll be going right back to accommodating workshops and every other bit of, art installation of course, our speaking tracks. That's all sort of the basis of what we're considering to get that going again. And a hotel maybe would be nice.
Well, Greg had two dreams, really, that he was quite passionate about. One was the formation of a nonprofit to start with, which, I thought was just, it's impossible, too much work. I was just kind of resistant to it. But he plotted ahead with it and got us to see the wisdom of it. And I don't think we'd be here now were it not for his efforts. And these are efforts he made in the last months of his life, which is just simply incredible to me. And the other dream he had was returning to Manhattan. We love Queens. We really love Queens. But there is something so special about being in Manhattan, and we've never lost sight of that. It just was impossible. But then again, impossible means something different to us. Impossible to us means awesome and very, very doable, because we fall into all kinds of things. We have the most amazing connections, and we just believe in persisting when others say stop. And that's what hacking is, just continuing to go when everybody tells you it's not going to work. and you find a way to make it work. So Greg believes that we could do that. I definitely believe we can do that. Now we just have to do it, and I think we can. I really think we can. Yeah. You can see why I didn't talk about this on the radio, because it would have taken up the whole show.
One thing that you can do that's really easy, even before, you could do it right now. You can't buy a Hope ticket yet, but one thing you can do is make a donation to this new nonprofit. It's set up for monthly contributions and one-time contributions and yearly contributions, which is you can make a donation every year on February 4th.
Isn't that amazing? Doesn't that site look good? I was really impressed by it.
Yeah.
Very good work, yeah.
I think I have probably come clean about this once or twice. I work in the nonprofit development sphere. That's what I do professionally. And a lot of people talk to me about Zephy. I see it in a lot of places. It doesn't work for the organization that I work at for a lot of reasons, but it's really great when people can. So it's hooray.
Well, we must trade stories, because it's worked well for us so far. So hopefully it'll continue to work well for us. And of course, you know, there's people already wanting us to take Bitcoin. Oh, we'll get to it. You know, we'll see what we can do. But right now, you know, it's PayPal and it's you know, credit cards and things like that, and envelopes of cash, I guess. I don't know.
That's like just a part of the sort of initial process of announcing it, and we just want to get that part of it going. And of course, yeah, we'll definitely take new things into consideration. We've had so many votes of encouragement and even suggestions for things just since the announcement that we're already looking into and just kind of exploring. And it's cool that so many people over the years have put us, you know, supported us, put us in this position, and we want to honor that in doing this and do it right, and really be kind of strategic and smart about how we sustain what everyone along the way has worked so hard on and been and is what we've found and heard from people so important to people. We've heard such sincere testimonials from people about the event and what it means to them, and as a platform or as something that they learned from. So, yeah, it's cool. We'll try new things. We'll see how it works. Those were things we looked into. We looked into a lot of stuff. And, of course, you know, the clock is ticking. We are very much feeling a sense of urgency with all of this. So, yeah, that was something that we were referred to, I guess. So we'll see how it works. I hope people, you know, sign up and do what they can.
Can I tell you guys a story? Monday, Kyle and I were in the city. We went to the Steve Colbert show. And John Oliver was a guest. It was a lot of fun. I got pulled up on stage. I got pulled up on stage at the Steve Colbert Late Show, not at the program itself, but the pre-show where they have the comedian that gets everybody to laugh and scream and all that. I was wearing my Chinese winter hat made from a rabbit that's over 40 years old, and it keeps me warm. I wear it in the winter, and I wear it inside when there's no place to put my hat. And so the guy saw me and said, "Hey, you with the hat, get up on stage." And I got interrogated on stage in front of the entire audience, the same audience that saw Steve Colbert and John Oliver. And this guy was asking what I was involved in, and I was telling him all the cool things that I was involved in, you know, whether that's 2600 or Hope or just, you know, privacy issues and things like that. The crowd loved it. These are people that were not hackers. I was getting applause. People were just so into what it was that I was involved in. And I think we forget that sometimes. We forget that the world that we are in, that we're doing all kinds of crazy things. If you explain it to people, they get it. They really get it, and they support you. And, boy, I hope that's a sign for the future, you know. I also realize standing up there on that stage, what an honor, first of all. But it's so tiny. It's so incredibly small. You're in this room and you realize that audience isn't that many people. It's, you know, a few hundred people, sure. But it's, you know, about the size of some of the rooms we've had for our conference. And, you know, there's Steve Colbert's desk right there. There's, you know, the band right next to that. Everything was just so incredibly small. But, you know, in a good way. You realize how intimate shows are, how intimate performances are, Broadway shows, television shows. So it's it was a fun adventure and kind of an eye-opener for me.
We got to say hi to anyone who might be listening to this because you were introduced to this because you saw Emmanuel in a furry hat at the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Someone actually recognized me. Somebody tweeted or Blue Skied or something that they I got pulled up on stage because this wasn't broadcast or anything like that. So somebody and, you know, I had to correct them because they said it was the Tonight Show, and that's not the Tonight Show, obviously. It's the Late Show. But, yeah, it was kind of fun.
Someone also said hacker guy, I think, as we were walking
outside. Because I had the hat. Everybody said, you know, oh, look, it's a hacker guy.
Yeah, you're the hacker guy.
Okay, fine,
yeah,
I'm the hacker guy. Or the hat guy. I got
it
that,
It might have
too.
Been hacker. Maybe it was hacker.
No, they said hacker guy.
I think it was hacker.
But that other guy inside, the old guy, said, well, you just wore that hat to get on TV. No, I didn't. I wore the hat because I didn't want to step on it and put it on the floor. There's no place to put a hat, so I left it on. It was comfortable.
Well, and you were also...
I just wore the hat because it was cold.
Well, it's also cold inside the studio. So
you were pointing out the hacker person on our on that shirt.
I was wearing a shirt from Beyond Hope in 1997. That's how good our shirts are. I even said that on stage because the guy asked me, "Who's the guy? You know that's you know, behind the earth? It says owned." I said, "That's our hacker guy. You know, from 1997. We make good T-shirts. They last for this long."
That's really funny.
Yeah.
So I had something, you know, somewhat similar happen today in terms of like the enthusiasm for our curious subculture, which we're all a part here. Not nearly as cool as your story, but so it was maybe like 2 weeks ago. I had this friend she lives in London, but she's originally from Ireland, and she said, you know, her sister is a school teacher in Northern Ireland, in County Armagh, and that they were bringing some students over to New York, and they wanted to know if I could talk with some of these high school students about hacking and cybersecurity and various things. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, I can maybe introduce them to some people. So I said, you know, look, well, why don't we see if I can get them to, you know, to have a visit to the NCFTA, which is the National Cyber Forensics Training Alliance, and you've got a bunch of people there. It's like a public-private partnership thing where you have the National Crime Agency there from the UK, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Australian Federal Police, the FBI, and, you know, a bunch of other people. I've done a lot of work with them. I'm very friendly with the managing director there. And so the managing director said, yeah, you know, bring them over. And then I found out that it wasn't like five or six students. It was 45. It was 45 high school students from Northern Ireland.
Wow.
That came over, and the guys over at NCFTA were like, no, it's totally fine. We got a classroom. Like, bring them in there, and we talked with them, and we introduced them to people. And I told them about my background, how I got started in all of this, and that, you know, I was a hacker who then became a lawyer. And, you know, as my mother always said, that means I went from bad to worse. And, you know, they found that very funny as well. And this kind of story about how I ended up being the NFL CISO and all these things. And they totally loved it. They loved it. We forget how interesting we actually are sometimes.
That reminds me. Oh, yeah. Thank you for bringing this up. Remember last year when you went to the Super Bowl and I said, could you get me in next year? I totally forgot to bring it up.
You did,
it's coming up. It's coming up. Is it this Sunday, Carl? I think it's this Sunday coming up.
I don't know.
And where is that? In
San Francisco.
San Francisco. Yeah, okay, you know. If you could just get us a couple, that would be good. Yeah.
Well, you know, the deputy CIO of the NFL, he and I met originally at a 2600 meeting.
That's right.
Way back in 1994, and you know him, so look, it's in the cards.
Hopefully it's in the mail, because, you know, I got to book a flight now.
Yeah.
Unless that's covered, too. I don't know.
No, I wish it was when I went there. The most expensive part of going to the Super Bowl, even if you have the tickets and everything comped, like I did last year, was the accommodations are insanely expensive.
Yeah, that reminds me of the episode of Seinfeld where somebody offered George tickets to the Super Bowl. It's like, does it include a flight? Does it include a hotel? No. So right, basically you're handing me a bill for several thousand dollars right now.
Yeah.
And most people I know feel the same level of enthusiasm towards something like that. And I'm still pissed off about the World Cup because – you know, that's like 56 Super Bowl games that you can never get into because FIFA is just so corrupt and they price everything out of the reach of ordinary people. And, I wonder who all these millionaires are that are going to go to every single game. Because, you know, the cheapest ticket you can get, if you're able to get it, is several hundred dollars just for, a crappy seat. So, I'll watch it on TV. Thank you. Anyway, enough of me complaining. Let's open up the phone lines. I'm happy to say nobody is banned. Rebel, thank you for observing the ban. We just have to turn on the phone, so we've got to work on that. Give me a second.
So while he's working on that, I'll mention for anyone who wasn't listening on the radio hour, and why weren't you, that 2600 meetings are happening all over the world this Friday. Go to 2600.com/meetings. You could find the info for the one here in New York City or the ones elsewhere in the world, or you could find info on how to start one near you if there isn't one near you. And, you can remedy that. Start it yourself, 2600.com/meetings.
I'm having trouble with this interface.
Gila and I went to the Colbert Show years ago. It was
2020. Yeah.
Early 2020, before shit hit the fan. And we didn't get an opening comic because our pre-show experience was the State of the Union address.
You did get an opening comic.
Yes.
I mean, who was giving the State of the Union then?
Right. It was a slight. It was a different experience of warming up the audience.
Yeah.
But the other thing was we were there for a live show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he went on live after the State of the Union, and it was pretty cool.
it was cool, but there was not an opening warm up comic in that sense, and nobody got brought on stage,
and it was freezing cold in that room, and we were there for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think you got the better pre-show experience.
Yeah, we didn't get to go up on stage.
It's funny because he does screw up lines occasionally, and he has to take them again. And it's just funny, the crowd loves it when you screw up, when you say, oh, shit, I got to do that again. And then later on when you watch it, you see where the edit is, and it's really mm-hmm. well done. But, of course, you can't do that when it's live. You know, we have the same experience in radio, because if we do a live show, it's very different. If we do a mm-hmm. show on tape ever, we don't do that often, because when you do, you just feel the need to take a line again, and it's just like you can't get it right. Whereas if you're on live, you have no choice. You have to get it right, and it's just, if you stumble over a word, you keep going. But if you're taping, you go back, and you just keep, trying to get it right, and you never do get it right. Wait, I could say that better. Hold on a second. What I meant to say was, you just got to keep at it, and that's how you get good. That's what I'm told. I'm told that anyway. All right, phone line.
It can work like this. I'll be in my trailer.
The telephone is on 802-321-4225. That is our phone number, so give us a call if you want to be part. Okay, and also we tested this microphone that I'm talking to you on right now, because last week on BAI, I don't know if it was a coordinated operation or something, but people were saying they couldn't hear me. And then we did this elaborate test after the show. We've done more tests since. And there's nothing wrong with my microphone. It's as loud as everybody else's. We tested it. We used the phone. So, try something else. Do we have a phone call? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, Emmanuel. I can't hear you.
Rebel,
well,
I am going to find you, and I am going to be merciless. I swear
all
to God.
Right, I can hear you now.
You better believe
all
you
right,
can
I can
me.
Hear you.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, God, you guys still can't figure this out?
Wait, is this the fake Rebel? This is the fake Rebel, isn't it? Are you the fake
Rebel?
You know
what? Maybe I'm going to donate to you so that you can get a better phone system. Maybe that's what you should start raising money for.
How do we test this guy?
All right, just a minute.
this is real Rebel because he's talking about donating.
I don't know. I think this is fake Rebel. I think there's a delay there and it's churning. It's just like the 11 Labs Rebel.
The delay is what's, you know, he's not trying to connect us to something else. So, I don't know. I don't think this is real.
We did see Real Rebel in the chat, so he is listening.
That doesn't mean this is him here, though.
The fact that you're saying that is just it's surreal.
And the fact that you
and
think
he's
that,
never been silent for this long.
You saw him in a chat, that makes him real? Think about what you're saying.
I'm saying it's possible.
This is a busy signal. But
that's my voice. All right. That was fun. But let's not do that again. 802-321-4225. See, if that was Rebel, and it rose to the point of pissing me off, I wouldn't know if I should ban him or somebody else.
But you realize what we're talking about now. If we're having these conversations about whether or not he's real,
mm-hmm.
It's the Velveteen Rebel.
This is going to happen over and over again, where we're not going to know what's real and what's not. You know?
Do you want my help, or do you
Yes, you have the information card. You can tell if the phone number was the same.
I would say that was a known number from the caller you're suggesting it is.
You're saying that was Rebel. That was really Rebel.
As far as I know.
Okay. Because there's no way other people would know his... Would you pick that up, please? There's no way other people would know his number.
Correct.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello.
Yes.
On today's radio show, Alex said a number of things.
He said, didn't he?
That Yeah, he said that the people who are ICE agents have no scruples. Do they seek out people who have no scruples, or do people who have scruples lose their scruples?
Oh, interesting.
That's a good question, I guess, right? I mean, maybe it's self-selecting in a way, right? But it reminds me of... Well, what we were talking about before, which was with respect to the artists that made ICE-related songs, there is another song, I think it was a folk artist or something, right? Like Jesse Wells, I think, that this song called Join ICE. You've heard that one, right, Emmanuel? You guys, have you heard the Join ICE song?
Yes, we have played that particular track that he produced. And that was someone that came to mind when... Ian and I were talking about just in general the kind of marketplace of anthems and folk music in this time.
You're talking about Jesse Wells, right?
Yeah, and that, there's just a variety of ways to get your voice out there in streaming platforms like the one we're using right now, and other ways. You don't necessarily have to even have a record deal. Also, community and local radio stations and stuff are great ways. So, yeah, that track, what of it, Alex?
Yeah, because the caller's asking, you know, do people who join ICE lose their scruples, or do they not have any scruples to begin with, right? And so, like, that whole song is about, you know, like, join ICE, essentially, like, if you're a reject and you want to, you want to feel like a man and carry a gun, that kind of thing. So I think it depends, right? I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who worked for ICE back, you know, when DHS was originally formed or during the Obama administration who weren't necessarily evil. But I think that the mission creep of ICE will often affect the psychology of individuals, and it also affects the type of person who's attracted to ICE now. I think the type of people who want to join ICE and become ICE agents right now probably do have a lack of scruples, or they don't understand fundamentally how unconstitutional the mission of that particular agency is at the moment. So I think it's a combination.
I would add, you have to consider, though, there's a variance in there. I think the two officers that shot Alex Preddy were hired earlier on, I think,
yes.
Prior to this latest rush that was found in, I think, some of the early reporting since their names have been released. So it really does matter as far as that institutional sort of leadership. What is the culture turn into even after someone has been hired, and not, may not necessarily be just an attribute of these rushed hirings or
well, people can
surging.
Change. People can certainly change. You might be more qualified and have worked there for 10 years, but if a whole bunch of people just get hired from white supremacist groups, it's going to dilute, I sound like a white supremacist myself, it's going to dilute the purity of the people that you know, are involved in this.
It's an environment.
And everybody's going to suffer as a result.
Yeah, it's like a sort of permissiveness.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a culture of awfulness that permeates that place, I'm sure. I mean, I think that there are probably few and far between kind, good souls who are trying to affect positive change from within at this point.
I think, you know, it's destroyed right now. It really is, it is totally destroyed, and it just needs to be disbanded and maybe something else formed with a lot more thought behind it and a lot more intelligence behind it. But I think ICE is done. I really do. Does any of that answer your question, caller?
I think that, I guess so, yes.
Okay.
And so why can't law enforcement agents who are not ICE arrest the ICE agents who are committing crimes?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And, you know, it's been brought up in Minnesota that the National Guard, for instance, is being brought in to protect the people, not the cops. And that's exactly what they should be doing. We've seen, was it the DA from Philadelphia saying we will hunt you down if you do something illegal in our city? He's saying that to ICE agents. And, you know, I applaud that kind of spirit. I don't want to see open warfare in the streets between different law enforcement agencies, but better them than innocent people that, you know, are just expressing their opinion or just existing. We really need to take a good look at how the situation has devolved so far.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call. 802-321-4225. Good call there, and definitely interesting topics that we're discussing.
Yeah, and on that issue of whether the ICE agents can be arrested, detained themselves, they generally have what's known as qualified immunity for the actions that they take in their official capacity. But if they operate outside of that capacity, then they lose that qualified immunity. And
who determines that, though?
Probably a court would have to determine it, and a judge would have to determine it. I think it's actually probably a mixed question of law and fact here with respect to any particular incident, right? But for the most part, they do operate with some kind of immunity because they're acting in their federal capacity here. But if they are knowingly violating somebody's civil rights, they may be stripped of that qualified immunity as well. And in particular, so in the case that I have, the petition for the writ of habeas corpus that I litigated and won last week, so I'm keeping that case open. One of the things I said to the judge was, well, you know, this is so blatantly unconstitutional what ICE did, and every one of these cases takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. I mean, easily it was 15, 20 hours of my time to deal with, this petition and the back and forth with the judge and the preparation. And I mean, just preparing for the hearing last Friday, I felt like I was 90% there in terms of winning it, but I still had to prepare for 3 or 4 hours that day just in case I had to be ready to fight. And so I said to the judge, well, I'd like to keep this case open because we may seek costs and fees from ICE for what they've done here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a briefing schedule. And I think, look, we have to throw it back at them. We have to push back against this because there's got to be some goddamn consequences for putting us all through the paces so that they can go through this you know, charade of having power to detain people.
Yeah,
they know what they're doing is wrong, and they keep doing it. They should have to pay for it.
So that brings up a really interesting question because, you know, I've seen this countless times on television where, you know, some thug is walking up to a car and doesn't like the way the person in the car is in the car. I don't know what they don't like. They don't like something about the person sitting in the car, and they just smash the window with whatever tool they have that does that in just one stroke. Well, who's responsible for that? What happens when you have one of these people smash your window and vandalize your car? You're supposed to just walk away from that and wish them a nice day? Or do they actually face some sort of consequence? And how the hell do you do this when you don't even know who they are? You don't even see their face.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So there are countless people that's happened to, people who have had it light compared to those taken into custody. But my God, are we supposed to just tolerate this?
Yeah, this property damage, and how do you do this, right? I mean,
where do I get one of those tools so I can go to their cars when they're finished and, you know, exact my form of justice?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fundamental lack of accountability, and there are very few mechanisms to hold them accountable. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to bring a lawsuit against ICE itself for that? I mean, it's so time-consuming and expensive to even try to recoup the money for property damage like that. It's just the effort isn't worth the recovery. So these people wind up probably just making insurance claims or, you know, whatever they have to do in order to get.
Does insurance even cover when a cop goes rogue and smashes your window?
I would hope that would fall under definition of occurrence under most policies.
Oh,
but
I think that would fall under Terrorist Act or Act of God. I'm not sure which, but one of them.
I don't know. Yeah. Hey, but it's a problem. You know, when they're going around causing property damage, they should have to pay.
Absolutely. Individually.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Cover Time. Go ahead. Yes, it's you. Go ahead. Don't know what you're doing there, but you're on the radio or whatever this is. No? All right. Well, I guess you're unwrapping a candy or something. I don't know what's going on. Kyle, let's move on to the next one. 802-321-4225. Folks, you got to be prepared. I know sometimes we keep people on hold for a while, but you can hear what we're saying. They can hear us, right, when they're on hold? Yeah, so it's not like you're abandoned, you know, we're you know, keeping you company in that form, and then eventually we get to you. That's just how it works. 802-321-4225.
And when we get to you, we bring you on stage and show people your metaphorical furry hat.
Mm-hmm.
while we're waiting for a call, I want to read this.
We already have a caller.
Oh, okay, right. then I'll keep that for later.
And good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, are you able to hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Is that a yes?
That's a yes. We hear you fine. Hello?
I don't know if you guys are able to hear me, but I want to add a bit to the whole unfortunate constant avalanche of the Epstein files that's related to computer hacking.
Well, hang on a second. You can't hear me?
I'm just going to continue on talking.
Can anybody else say something to see if this guy can hear
me? Hey, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can
hear
you fine.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Awesome. Perfect.
So, what, you can't hear me? God damn it. Why can't you hear me? I hear myself. Everyone else hears me. We tested this. Whatever.
I hear you all.
I'm going to just be quiet.
I love technology. Just wanted to add, unfortunately, because as the Epstein files keeps going on, the tunnel keeps getting worse and worse, and this is actually related to hacking. So, about a day or two ago, one of Hope's awesome previous speakers, Maggie Mayhem, who's also been searching through all the recent release files. I don't know if I'm allowed, and I'm not going to say who everyone thinks was the personal hacker of Epstein, but basically they found out that allegedly he had tried to attend DEF CON in 2018, and that same contact was also trying to get him extra passes, which, as a follow-up, Dark Tangent has talked about how he dealt with that and denied it and pointed him to Epstein's Wikipedia page, and that this is how just bad and far-reaching all this stuff is, including now, very recently, the idea of who was actually getting Epstein connections, both in the hacker scene and the general tech scene. Just wanted to add that because this is going to be the worst roller coaster ever, but as they said in Mr. Robot Season 3 at the end, at least the masks are off to some degree, and we know who all these people are. So that's all.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you for that characterization of it. It's been like a lot of kind of sifting through, and yeah, I think it's going to take some reporting. It's going to take some stories about it, and it's very early on, I think, for it. But yeah, we'll have to read about it a little bit more. And if we get some stories here, we'll definitely share it on the show and stuff like that. But you're not wrong.
Yeah, it's more of also just like, because of how far-reaching the stuff is, because we've already seen corporations do things like this of just like, we're probably going to find out tidbits of who's trying to bring in who and who's carrying what, and just like do what the hacker community normally does best in globally, which is to stay vigilant and keep hacking.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting the sorts of wealth and the intersection of all of that. And we have to sort of appreciate that a lot of people were being kind of used for this sort of knowledge and access in different ways to this subculture. Yeah. And like, we just sort of report on it. We're not stand-ins or spokespeople for it in general. It's a much bigger group. And you never know kind of like who is trying to break into that group with different motives and stuff, and especially with like startup culture and different kinds of moneyed interests in that vein, it can definitely have kind of an influence on different people and their motivations. But I agree, yeah, like you find these things out. The masks do, it is revealing, and that's part of the whole disgust over redactions, and that's the nature of going through someone's email.
Thank you, folks. Abolish ICE, hack the planet. Hanging up, man.
You gotta talk to the callers if they can't hear me. You guys gotta say something.
And Kyle had it. Kyle was holding it down. You were doing great.
I tried.
I was actually bringing a question from the chat. Ampararod 2000 asks, how many magazines does the full back issue set come with? Is it really the full set? And I was going to try to answer it, and then I realized I should ask you guys. You really know.
There's a bunch. If you go to the store and you look up back issues and you scroll through back issues, you'll see a bunch that say sold out. And those are ones that we don't have. You wind up getting all of those in digital form. And it actually works out quite well because you get the entire year. If spring 1992 is out, but all the rest of 1992 isn't out, you will get the 1992 Hacker Digest, which is basically a kind of like a book form of the entire year in digital format. So you'll get those three paper issues, but you'll also get the entire year digitally if one of those issues is sold out. So you wind up getting everything in one form or another. When we run out of the back issues, they're gone. We can't make any more. You get everything. It's hard to say exactly how many you will get because that does change. But if you go through the back issue section, you'll get a sense as to how many are sold out.
Excellent. And then the other question, to which I'm pretty confident I know the answer, but wanted to come in for clarification. Does buying stuff from the 2600 store support WBAI or just 2600?
It's not BAI, no. You support BAI by pledging to BAI. And we should have said that tonight. Go to WBAI.org, buddy.WBAI.org, give to WBAI.org, and pledge whatever you can, and keep 99.5 FM broadcasting, because, boy, that place is really vital. It's so important to have different voices. And if and when ICE comes to town for real, believe me, that's going to be a focal point of information.
Yeah. On that subject, I wanted to read something that was posted on social media by ICE Lip Forward. You know ICE Lip Forward?
Oh, yeah. They run an ICE app that I hear every day. A couple of weeks ago, I think it went out over the air. I have a siren alert that I attach to it. So every time there's an ICE raid anywhere on Long Island, I get a siren.
Oh, right. We've heard it.
It's embarrassing when you're, in a crowd of people and it goes off. Or if you're in church. There's all kinds of Well, sometimes they're raiding the church, so it does actually... Well, the point is, you need to hear this. You need to know. Today, for instance, a lot of raids in Greenport, a lot of raids in Riverhead, Hempstead. I can tell you all the places ICE is operating on Long Island, Central Islip, Brentwood. They are out in force, and usually they come back to the same places the next day. Today, they expanded out east a bit, and I know that they were terrorizing some kids in schools, and that's really sick. And that's why you get a lot of demonstrations out east now, too. You wouldn't expect that, but...
Yeah, you wouldn't. But this post went up on the 30th of January, and it reads that approximately 9:30 a.m. this morning, federal agents were documented using infrastructure located on the property of the Central Islip Fire Department, Station 2, at 110 Wheeler Road, without prior authorization to be on or use that space. When a volunteer with Islip Forward approached to document this activity, federal agents threatened the volunteer with arrest for alleged trespassing, despite the fact the agents themselves operating in an area where no prior permission had been granted. Immediately following this interaction, the Central Islip Fire Department took swift action to protect its property and the public. Temporary restrictions were implemented, including closing the gate to the area being used and preventing external access. The use of municipal fire department property for federal enforcement activity without authorization and the subsequent threat directed at a community volunteer raised serious concerns about transparency, overreach, and respect for local institutions. We're deeply grateful to the volunteer firefighters of the Central Islip Fire Department for their decisive and responsible response.
And that is really inspirational. I heard about that. In the past, fire departments have been a lot more eager to help ICE. I think, I don't want to say for sure, I think it was Brentwood where they were caught doing that, and they actually reacted with hostility to people who challenged them. And in this case, in Central Islip, it's the exact opposite. So it's really, really good to see that. We need to see that also in Nassau County, where ICE enthusiast Bruce Blakeman runs the county and basically helps out ICE. It's going to be interesting to see, because Kathy Hochul has made it illegal to do that for police departments to help ICE throughout New York State. We've even seen a Republican congressperson upstate introduce legislation to ban that kind of cooperation as well, a Republican. So that's where it's gotten. It's gotten to a really interesting place. I believe we have a phone call, but Kyle, I want to have a dialogue with you first before I start the phone call here. It's an odd thing that's going on. You hear me, right? Rob, Gila, Alex, you'll hear me, right?
Yes.
You hear me even when I'm talking quietly, right?
We hear you.
I do hear that. Okay, good. So what I am concerned about is that for some reason callers can't hear me on this microphone. Now, we tested this. We said we tested it. We did, and everything was fine. It's possible it's some kind of a loose connection that only seems to happen when I don't want it to. So, Kyle, before you touch anything, I'm going to ask you, can you swap out, and tell me if you can't, can you swap out your microphone for my microphone using the same connections on the board, and then let's see if they can't hear you instead of me, and then we'll know it's the connection. Is that doable?
Maybe.
Okay, well, we'll wait for you to do that, and then we'll take the phone call, and we'll see if that might fix the problem. And you guys talk amongst yourselves, because I'll probably be cut off because he's going to unplug me.
Okay. Well, we did just get an interesting question in the chat from this listener whose name I'm going to butcher again, so I'm not going to say it, but who plans to buy the full back issue set, and asks to everyone in the chat, but I'm also going to throw this at the folks on the panel, what is your favorite 2600 issue and why?
Well.
And Rebel Emanuel's not talking right now, so no, you can't hear him.
That is an interesting question, and it's hard to pick one out because I've been reading 2600 for about 100 years now, and I would say that at any given time, my favorite issue is probably the most recent one that I've gotten hold of, because that's new and happening stuff.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Stop yelling.
I'm not yelling.
I'm in the chat now.
Oh, stuff is going on over there. I don't know if...
The microphones are working. Okay, I'm sorry.
We heard all of that.
Kyle did he did the swap, but then he didn't tell me he finished. So I was just sitting here like an idiot, not knowing that he was finished. He was looking at his phone, and I just said, "Did you do anything?" and that was taken the wrong way. I'm sorry, finish what you were saying. I didn't mean to interrupt.
So, yes, my favorite 2600 issue is whichever the most recent one is that I've gotten hold of, because it's a bunch of stuff I hadn't read yet, and I'm interested to see the latest developments and everything.
I like that answer. Freshest.
The freshest, the hottest off the press.
There's always something new to learn.
The next issue, that's my
wow,
answer.
You really did swap, because I'm coming up under K and you're coming up under E.
Yeah.
So you really did. You really did. Well, no, that's exactly what I asked. I was just checking up on you to make sure you actually did it, and you did.
All right. Be gentle with my.
All right. So we're going to test it on the next caller. But in answer to the question, I think you were asking the favorite issue. I don't know if it's my favorite issue, but it's definitely a turning point. Autumn 1989. That was after the Galactic Hacker Party in Amsterdam. I returned from Europe, my first trip overseas ever. I was gone for 6 weeks. Kind of similar to the trip Kyle and I recently took. Didn't know when I was coming back. Just went over there and kept exploring and then said, okay, time to go back. I felt refreshed. And you can sort of see it in that issue. Every article just is really interesting and on topic. And it just looks really good. There's something about the feel of that issue that was different and inspirational for years to come. But that's just one I remember anyway. Lots of good issues, lots of great covers, so many amazing articles. All right, did everybody answer the question, or is anybody left? You guys were doing it.
Yeah, I think we got some good answers to be getting on with. Unless Alex, you want to jump in with your favorite issue of 2600 ever?
Why wouldn't you include Alex? Yeah, he's right there.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I can spend so much time with so many of the issues, especially back in the 90s. I remember I just have like great memories of lying in bed and reading the letters and the responses. It was very difficult to pick one in particular.
Yeah, you're not selling this to anybody. It's super vague. You're going to have to pick.
It is, but
pick a cover at least. Can you pick a cover?
Pick a cover. Jeez, you know what? I love the old covers. You know, like the old covers with the white behind them and all kinds of like, you know. Random.
Wow, what a description of a cover! Come on, give me a picture, an image, something.
Yeah.
White behind it.
No, you know what I'm talking about. That was like the design. There was that very consistent, almost trademark type of design back in the 90s.
Yeah, it was an image on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It was a very unique thing that we did. But
yeah. I think my favorite ones, though.
Here we go.
To think of it, they go all the way back to when they were on big sheets of paper.
Those aren't covers. Those are sheets of paper.
And we're talking about issues in particular, though.
Oh,
go back to the 80s. Those were super, super cool. I wish I still had them. I don't know what happened to them. I've moved so many times that I've lost them. But those are really, really cool, too. Those are pretty, I think, historical to see.
Well, so those of you who get all the back issues, you get all the covers. And whether you get them digitally or on paper, you get to appreciate them. And if you get the Hacker Digest, which is a whole other thing, every year is put out as a compendium, you get an explanation of every single cover, what they mean, or what we think they meant.
So is the one from Spring 96 that's marked as a special red box issue, was that designed to look like Time Magazine?
Yes. Well, it wasn't a coincidence. We also have one, I think in 96 or 97, we actually have two that look like Wired.
Yeah,
and
with the gorilla orangutan.
I think it's an orangutan, and then exactly 1 year later, it's Janet Reno. But
I remember that.
You look very carefully, the eyes are exactly the same. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I love that gag then, and I love it now.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about the Redbox issue, which was the Time Magazine thing, it was kind of, an allusion to mass media, getting it wrong as usual, and really getting it wrong here because there was no article about Redboxes in that issue. So that was kind of funny.
Oh, I have a favorite one then. It had to be from the 90s, maybe like 95 or something like that. Do you remember when we were driving somewhere and this truck passed by and it was the red box truck. There was like a red box, blue box truck. Remember
oh,
this thing?
Yes, it was the moving company. They were in Brooklyn, and yes, they basically their thing was we have red boxes and blue boxes, and of course for a phone freak that's just mecca right there. And
exactly.
Yeah, I think I was with you. We found their parking lot and took a picture of all these trucks that said that. So yeah,
that's right.
That was a good cover. And that was the one you were involved in. So yeah,
of course
you were.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was a cool one. Yep, that was a memory that just came flooding back to me.
I feel we owe this person's been on hold so long.
Oh, God,
We are going to test this and see if they can hear me fine or not hear me, and if they can hear Kyle okay. Caller, are you still there?
Yes, and I can hear you, Emmanuel.
You can. Kyle, would you greet our caller here?
Hey, what's up, Rebel?
Yeah, what's up, Kyle?
You heard Kyle okay? Wait, you heard
Yeah,
Kyle?
I heard Kyle okay, but okay.
God damn it.
I hear everybody fine. I hear everybody fine.
Oh,
and
great.
That was,
you know what? Yeah, I'll just be Kyle from now on, and you be Emmanuel. Maybe that's how it should be.
Who will I be?
I'll be you. You be me.
As we are all together.
You're Signalville. You're in Signalville. You don't have an identity.
Go ahead, Rebel. What's your comment?
Yeah, that was not me last week, or it was 2 weeks ago that played that, that. I guess it was an artificial, even have to be artificial intelligence. It was just recordings, you know, like, the automated, what is it called? The thing that says 30 cents, please.
Oh, yeah. And the old payphones. Remember those?
Yeah. It's called the automated digital recorded announcement machine. It takes different phrases and puts them together depending on what the situation, like
Rebel, you're the only person. You're the only person in the Western Hemisphere that will remember this. But do you remember it used to make some kind of little noise before it started speaking?
Yeah, it would go clink, clink, clink.
No, it was more like a wah 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 like that.
No, go, whatever. I can't believe I did that. Telecom.general. There's a website that has that all the recordings of that. You know, clink, clink, clink.
Yeah, more like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I always wondered when I was a kid, I always wondered what that meant and what that was for.
I think it meant that you're about to talk to a computer.
Yeah, but it's a recording of Jean Bard.
Uh-huh.
And, you know.
But people would think they were actually talking to her, you know. They would say, no, excuse me, ma'am, you know, and it would just get all awkward.
Yeah, but it would take what is the clink. The charges are $1.66 per tax for 1 minute.
More or less like that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rebel, was that you earlier tonight?
Yeah, it actually was earlier, yeah, when I couldn't hear you, yeah.
Okay, so that was him. All right.
I was right.
Yeah.
Good call.
Everyone else thought it was a fake, and I knew it was you, Rebel.
Yeah,
I knew.
Yeah, so that was not me 2 weeks ago. Which, when I first heard it, I thought that it was you had a, like a preempted show or like a recording.
Uh-huh.
You know, like sometimes we're pre-recording. I was like, I know I didn't call it this week or last week or whatever, but because I was listening to it anyway. Okay, now.
So you're innocent.
We're about to talk about artificial intelligence and like voices that are recordings. It's time for today's demonstration.
Oh, boy. So now we know this is Rebel.
Yeah.
It's obviously Rebel.
Okay. I was in California a couple of weeks ago.
You go there a lot.
Well, I go there every year. I mean, I don't go there. I would like to go there now. I wish I could go there now.
Oh, is this a dig at the snow? You don't like the snow?
Well, I'm down the cold.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'll tell you what, it's not going to get any warmer. It's going to be well below freezing all the way through next Sunday.
Yeah, I was going to go to Florida this weekend, to Miami. But
why do you want to go to Florida? A bunch of hot, fat, sweaty people. No, don't do that.
I have family down in Florida, so I don't.
I'm sorry for calling your family fat and sweaty, but look, you know it as well as I do that it's much better where you have seasons.
I know. California's more exciting than Florida.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's definitely more exciting because you got earthquakes there. You've got floods. You've got landslides.
No, you got people that
serial
ride
killers,
bikes and
wildfire.
Skateboards.
Wildfire.
And, you know, got surf on the beach uh-huh. and then smoke marijuana all day and things like that. You don't.
So you like California? Yeah, I know. I understand.
Yeah.
Now, what were we saying?
You were going to give us a demonstration.
Okay. California, I was, you know, I'd like to eat there and gaining weight. You know, I'm 150 pounds now, you know. You know, want to, you know, gain more, maybe muscle weight more than fat. So, you know, I call this, you know, UFC gym. You know, UFC, the, you know, that you know, fighting show that, you know, that looks like a street fight on TV. That,
okay.
You know, if they have these gyms, UFC gyms, and, you know, I want to ask a question, you know, when they're open till and things like that. And, oh, should I do this this way?
Wait, this is a demonstration. You're going to ask a gym what time they're open until?
No. I'm going to ask. I'm going to demonstrate what they do when you're when you call them.
They hang up on you, probably.
No.
No.
Hold on, and I'll demonstrate it.
Okay, I'll be surprised if they don't. Okay. He's got me intrigued.
Rebel the fighter.
Well, that's just scary. But yeah, we'll see where that goes. Listen to me. I'm actually waiting for Rebel to come back.
Marietta, note this call is being recorded. What's your name and can I help you?
I'll just press zero.
We don't have an option for zero.
Hey, isn't that annoying? Notice the background noise that they make you think that it's an office?
No, but she told you what number you dialed. She said zero. hit three. See if she says we don't have three.
If you're interested in the job or the hiring process,
I think you...
Thank you for calling UFC Gym Marietta. Your call will be answered shortly.
Oh, no, that's a human.
Let me get rid of this.
Are you ready for the ultimate?
No, he was talking to us.
without getting rid of you. But every gym you call does that. Every UFC gym, whether it's Marietta, California, Long Island, Los Angeles.
It's the same company, so it's not too surprising. What's more surprising is you're calling all these gyms.
No. It's the point is that I was calling to ask a question, and you get artificial intelligence, and you put zero, and it says, you know.
One might argue artificial intelligence is calling them as well, but...
Hey, wait a second.
What?
I'm sorry. A phone tree? It's a phone tree. It's not AI.
It's artificial intelligence.
No, it's not.
Wait, can you talk to it?
I'll play it again.
How we figure this out is, can you talk to it? Can you ask it things? Will it respond?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
And if so, can we inject some prompt?
Hold on.
Rebel has the floor here. Let Rebel do his thing. Waiting for Rebel to come back is what we're doing.
UFC Gym in Rosemead. Note this call is being recorded.
Okay, listen.
What's your name? How can I help you?
I just want to know about, UFC and MMA and all that other stuff. Operator.
Sure. If you'd like to talk to someone, just press 1 followed by the pound key to be transferred.
Okay, we're not going to do that.
All right. No problem. Are you interested in learning about our MMA classes or memberships?
No, I just want to learn how to knock somebody out. You know, like they do in UFC.
Got it. If you're referring to UFC-style training, we offer MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu classes. Interested?
Yeah, I just say, can you teach me how to knock somebody out?
Our MMA and boxing classes teach striking techniques for fitness and self-defense. Want class details?
Hey, are you human?
No. I'm a virtual assistant here to help with your questions. What matters most to you?
Do you feel loved?
No worries. Let me... As a virtual assistant, I don't have feelings. But I'm here to help you.
Oh.
How can I assist?
But I feel bad. I feel bad for you. I feel sorry for you.
No problem.
It's like
no need to feel bad.
Rebel, stop
interrupting. I'm here to help with any UFC gym questions.
Oh, Rebel, why listen to this?
Rebel, why are you interrupting? We're having a moment here, for God's sake.
Understood. Let me know if you have any UFC gym questions whenever you're ready.
I can't hear you. There's a lot of background noise.
Is there a lot of people with you right now?
Nope. It's just me.
Well,
I'm a virtual assistant here to help with UFC gym info.
Are you playing a recording of a crowd or something? Because it sounds like a lot of people are there.
from UFC Gym in Long Island. There's no note this call is being recorded. What's your name and how can I help you?
Wait, why are you recording this? What, who are you going to play it back for?
I don't record calls.
You just said you're recording the call. And now you say you're not recording the call. Which is it?
I don't record calls. I'm here to assist with any UFC Gym questions you have.
Is this call being recorded?
No, I don't record.
All right. Can we call back stenographer? Can we play back what she said before, where she said this call is being recorded?
I understand the concern. I don't have playback. I don't record. Or
I don't know. You're under oath. Do we realize that?
Got it.
All right.
Correct.
Mm.
How can I assist you? I'm just a virtual assistant. Great. Let me know if you have any.
How are you interrupting yourself? That's weird.
Because I have two of them. I'm going.
You have two of them?
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Let them talk to each other then.
That's what I'm going to do. Be quiet and listen.
I'm here to assist with any UFC Gym questions you have. Exactly. Let me know how I can UFC. Sure. How can I assist you with UFC Gym today? Sure. How can I assist you with UFC Gym today? Great. I'm here to assist you with any awesome. UFC Gym questions. Perfect. Let me know how I can assist you with UFC Gym questions or services. Absolutely. Thank you. What UFC Gym questions?
Okay. Can I just step in here?
You're welcome.
Can I please just step in here? I'd like to explain to you that there are two of you. Can you somehow talk to the other version of yourself?
I'm just one virtual assistant here to help with UFC Gym.
Don't you hear the other person talking at the same
time? I'm here to assist with it. No. I don't hear anyone else. I'm here.
You didn't hear anybody else say, I don't hear anybody else, just when you said that?
Nope. It's just me here to assist you with any UFC.
We're fucked.
Exactly. I'm here to assist with any UFC Gym questions. Let me know how I can help. Absolutely. Let me know how I can assist you with UFC Gym questions or services today. Sure. What UFC Gym questions or services can I assist you with today?
Do you speak any other languages?
Yes. I can assist in Spanish. I can assist in Italian. German.
Parlez-vous français?
Claro. Great. Let me know how I can assist. Ha. Vi can we? Sure. Français. How can I assist you with UFC Gym today? God.
I don't suppose you speak Mandarin.
Comment puis-je vous aider?
I don't speak. No, I can.
Don't you think
sure
that's
problem.
A little bit racist?
Let me know how I can.
A little bit racist that you don't speak, you know.
I'm here to assist. How can I assist you with? I understand your concern. I'm here to assist.
No, it's just that, you know, you speak the Western European languages, no problem. But as soon as we get into Asia, oh, I don't speak that. And, you know, you're...
I don't think people in Asia are into USC.
Oh, what's this, Rebel? Really? You're making that kind of pronouncement?
I don't know. I don't know. Is there an Asian UFC fighter? I don't know.
Can you get rid of one of them at least? And maybe
let's get rid of.
I understand.
Let's get rid of one of both.
Just one, because you know we were having a nice conversation until that second.
Okay, there. I got rid of one. I don't know which one, but
I'm sorry. That got really confusing. Are you still there, assistant? Hello, is anyone there?
I still hear the fake background noise.
Maybe that's you. Maybe you're in a crowd.
It hung up.
Wow. Well, finally, some good sense. Rebel, that was entertaining. I'll give you that. But I'm kind of worn out. So give us any closing thoughts.
Do you notice how they play like office background of like office noises? Like they play it to make you think that it's like an office you're going?
I didn't hear that.
I heard it.
Oh, you didn't? You heard it, Kyle?
Yeah, that was really from their that call, right?
I didn't hear that.
I guess if you listen to the
I'm recording a Vote the Heart, Daniel.
I'm here to help you.
Are you human?
I am an artificial.
No.
I am an artificial. You know, it's awfully hard to talk to you people. They keep interrupting. I see why they get so frustrated.
We're getting some suggestions that I should, like, do it like a demonstration at Hope about something like that.
Yeah, you know, find us a home, and then we'll do the demonstration there. How about that?
Mm-hmm. All
right. Yeah. We're gonna move on because it's way late, and we're gonna take one more phone call. Right, one more, and that's it. But Rebel, thank you. That was fun.
Okay.
Take care. Wow, that was something. Is that amazing? He was banned last week, and the life of the party this week. That's just how it works sometimes. 8023. Oh, I'm sorry. I have you guys turned off because you were interfering with the artificial intelligence.
Well, now we can interfere with the real intelligence.
Good luck finding it. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. We can take one more phone call, then that's going to do it.
But that was a lot of fun. In the old days, we used to prank call various services and just conference them in with each other without saying anything and let the conversation go where it may. But that was being done with humans and not robots.
I used to, at the radio station, we had a key phone. It had five buttons on the bottom. It's like a regular Centrex type phone. Mm-hmm. You ever use one of those? You press a button down, pick up the phone?
Uh-huh.
So we had five of them, but somebody modified it so you could press two buttons down at the same time. And with that, it's a simple thing, but basically you would be able to connect one line to the other. So what happens if you call two operators at the same time? It's you know, basically, operator can help you. Operator, yes, operator. And eventually they just either get into a fight or they figure out they're in the same office or they just get super confused. We did this to pizza shops, to taxi drivers. Mm-hmm. The taxi drivers really took it seriously because they thought they were being messed with by the competition. And they were basically about to, like, meet up for real to settle the score. It was, you know, people would gather around for this. I didn't have any particular skill. I was just the only one that did it. So I'd hook people together, and we'd just sit back and listen to them, and then we would hook people that knew each other together, and, you know, they didn't know who called who. And you called me. No, I didn't call you. My phone rang. That doesn't make any sense. And we might have broken up some friendships in the process. But whatever, it was a lot of fun. And then the Roam phones came, which allowed you to pair many more lines together. Mm-hmm. And we could get five operators together at the same time. Boy, that really turned into a carnival. So, yeah, you can't do that anymore. You can't have that kind of fun anymore. It's just, it's a shame. There was no caller ID then, too, so nobody knew what, who was doing what. All right, last call of the night. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi. You accused me of not waiting for you, but you cut me off earlier.
What was that? Oh, were you the one with the candy wrapper or whatever that noise was?
No candy wrapper.
Well, there was some kind of noise, and we kept talking, and no one said. But if there was something weird with the wiring or the board, and you couldn't hear me, then you had a reason not to say anything. But now,
no, I could hear the conversation, and you guys not getting to me, and then it cut off. And when I pressed the button on my computer to hear you through the computer, since the phone call had been cut off, you were saying, oh, people know that they're supposed to wait, they can hear us, and it's not our fault if they're impatient or something like that.
It's hard to remember a blank phone call and how I exactly reacted to it. But listen, you're here now. That's the important thing. What's on your mind?
Okay. Alex, as a lawyer, perhaps can help my question here. If someone is the program director of one station and both the general manager and program director of another station in the first station's listening area, and they have not disclosed this, isn't this a bit of a major conflict of interest, as is stated in the Bible? bylaws?
Well, let me just step in here because we're talking about station business. Even though we're not on the station, I don't think we should be doing that. But I already know what you're talking about, and if I know about it and I don't pay any attention, it sounds like they must have disclosed it.
Well, I've tried to bring it up at board meetings, and people have shouted me down and said we might get sued.
But I don't know why he gets sued.
It's the listener's business to know this.
I don't think that's a concern. I really don't, because anyone can find out that information. You know, it's public information, so I don't think anyone's trying to hide anything.
Well, I've been shouted down quite vigorously, and at one meeting, town hall meeting, the person whose Zoom it was shut the town hall down. Poof, rather than let me speak.
Well, Zoom operators have always been a problem with things like that. We have no idea who that is or what was motivating them, but I think that's where you need to look for issues like this.
Well, what does Alex think of
yes.
all this?
What
Should
does Alex think?
Have a right to know at the board meeting and so forth?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to look at the bylaws, and I'd have to look at the details of how this person was hired, as well as certainly in many contexts, people are supposed to disclose their outside business interests if they could create some kind of conflict or some kind of appearance of partiality, because you want to avoid all of that, right? So, but I don't really know without having the benefit of looking into and digging into the actual documents itself. But I would say I don't think it would be per se some kind of conflict of interest unless there was an actual conflict or some kind of competition between the two stations, or there was a fiduciary obligation of this person towards one station as over and above another. So
doesn't Marco Rubio have two jobs? Isn't he, like Secretary of State?
Yeah.
And he's also like the archivist or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
So,
but she's programming two stations against each other. You can't listen to both at the same time.
Well, it doesn't mean
it is, according to the bylaws. It's a conflict of interest.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, you can have totally different audiences.
If it's specifically said, listed in the bylaws, then, bring that up. But it just seems like a weird thing to be overly concerned about, unless the job isn't getting done, and you can point to that and say, look, this job's not getting done. Maybe it's because, this person also works a full-time shift at Denny's. You could come up with any reason and say that not enough attention is being paid to a particular task.
Would you look into it and maybe get me an answer?
I don't have a lot of bandwidth.
Alex, put the next refugee on hold and deal with this.
Alex is a lawyer. He is not your lawyer. So in this matter, he might have to duck out.
Yeah, it would be difficult for me to dig into this without spending a lot of time. And I would say, follow your instincts here. Look at the documents. And they should hopefully speak for themselves. But it also, what comes to mind is, even if it is a conflict, if it's not having any actual effect, then what's the problem?
As I said, you can't listen to both stations at the same time.
Well, that's going
to
be true no matter what.
Yes, but yeah. She's programming both of them.
Well,
against each other.
Okay, but hang on.
If you write two books at the same time, it's not a conflict of interest. You're just doing more work.
I'm sorry, caller, is anyone else upset by this, or are you just trying to inflame tensions, which is maybe why they didn't let you speak?
Well, other people are upset. And what if somebody was programming CBS and NBC?
I don't think I'd be able to tell the difference. I don't know. I don't know if any humans are programming any of that crap.
It sounds to me like you're trying to gin up an argument for the sake of ginning up an argument. we can't help you with this, and we're really not super psyched about washing the station board's dirty laundry during our after show.
Well,
I think you're being unfair.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there because it's 9:30, and we're getting cranky and tired.
So,
good luck. It's pick a station to listen to, and don't worry so much about who's in charge. Because basically, we're doing our show, and no one's telling us what to do. I think at these non-commercial radio stations, a lot of trust is put in programmers, and that's the way to do it. It doesn't require somebody there basically writing a script and making sure that this particular thing is said at a particular time. So it's really, it doesn't really have the signature of any particular person who happens to hold a position. The important thing is that the stations are staying on the air, and that's a challenge in and of itself. And I have to say, recently, it seems like it's been staying on the air pretty well. We're not living in this dire situation that I think we've been living in for years. We're going to have to leave it there, though, because this could go on all night long. I think that does go on all night long in a lot of places. I want to thank everybody who called. Please write to us, oth@2600.com. If you're interested in Hope or you have ideas for Hope or questions of any sort, write to feedback@hope.net. And hopefully we can build something really cool. I'm looking forward to this. A lot of really cool people involved. Alex, I know you have something you wish to say.
Just in relation to the last caller here, just one final thing I wanted to note for her to benefit here. But in these types of situations, I do think it's the contracts that probably would control, and that just like anything else, disclosure of the two positions is really and possibly the best disinfectant that there is here. Right? You're shedding light on it. If you're not hiding it, you're open and you're transparent about the fact that you're program director on two different stations, and both those stations consent to you being program director, I don't think that there's likely a problem. That would be my educated guess on this without digging into the facts and the bylaws and all of that. That number one, there's disclosure and that's a disinfectant. And if both parties consent, so be it.
I'm pretty sure there are stations, commercial stations particularly, where someone can be a program director of many stations at the same time.
Yeah, especially if they're owned by the same corporate entity.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's very likely, but yeah,
If there's evidence of we didn't air this program, which would have been great for our listeners, because the other station had to have it instead, that might be a conflict. If you can point to something like that and say, we're hurting, but if it's just this person can't do two things, maybe they can. Maybe they can do five things. You don't know. The important thing is that things are getting done. And my sense is that things are getting done. And I don't say that very often, but I don't know. It just feels like it's not a constant crisis like it's been in the past. You've heard us in the past. Listen to our old shows, begging for money all the time. These hours-long shows where we're pitching all kinds of things. Yeah, it was fun. It was great, getting support from listeners. But if we don't have to do that anymore and we can keep the station going in other ways, I think that's preferable.
All right. Yeah, and the consistency with which we've been on the air has been fairly remarkable.
We used to get preempted so much, and we're not preempted at all anymore.
Amazing.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes we have to ask to be preempted because we don't have the staff or we're doing other things.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, we're going to have to go. So any final words from anybody? 2600 meetings everywhere this weekend. Check 2600.com/meetings for info on that.
Absolutely, and just keep your heads up and keep an eye out.
Yes.
Have fun.
I'm sorry, you're down.
You turned me down.
No, I thought I turned me down because
I just want to
it's
say
labeled
have fun.
E and you're K.
Have fun, misbehave, and try to have a sense of humor. That's my best advice. And in difficult times. And stay warm. Look out for people, you know?
That's all, Kyle? That's all?
That's all I have.
Nothing about defeating ICE and winning justice for the people? And
That goes without saying. That's
where did,
like,
Alex go? Alex disappeared. Look, he's gone.
Yeah, he left us.
He just walked away? Did he say anything, Rob, Gila?
Not that I heard.
No, he just dropped off.
What
maybe
the hell?
Maybe it was accidental. Maybe it was on purpose. I don't know.
Well, this is being written up. We're still on the air.
Yeah, but this is longer than we usually do this. We're in overtime right now.
Do you think I don't want to be somewhere else right now? Of course I do. But I don't just walk away. Oh, man. All right. Post-show meeting starts in a few. Folks, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Bye.